The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to those who are here for the first time. This is called Chiyoni's No Water, No Moon. It's from The Hidden Lamp, stories from 25 centuries of awakened women. This takes place in 13th century Japan. Chiyoni was a servant in a Zen convent who wanted to practice Zazen. One day she approached an elderly nun and said, "I'm humble of birth. I can't read or write and must work all the time. Is there any possibility that I could attain the way of Buddha, even though I have no skills?" The nun answered her, "This is wonderful, my dear. In Buddhism, there are no distinctions between people. There is only this. Each person must hold fast to the desire to awaken and cultivate the heart of great compassion. People are complete as they are. If you don't fall into delusive thoughts, there is no Buddha and no sentient being. There is only one complete nature. If you want to know your true nature, you need to turn to the source of your delusive thoughts. This is called Zazen." Chiyoni said with happiness, "With this practice as my companion, I have only to go about my daily life practicing day and night." After months of wholehearted practice, she went out on a full moon night to draw some water from the well. The bottom of her old bucket, held together by bamboo strips, suddenly gave way, and the reflection of the moon vanished with the water. When she saw this, she attained realization. Her enlightenment poem. "With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together, and then the bottom fell out. Where water does not collect, the moon does not dwell." So I wanted to continue recognizing the importance of our ancestors and acknowledging our Dharma ancestors in particular, as we chanted this morning, the generations of realized women whose practice and teachings bring us the Dharma here and now. Some known, some unknown, all the realized beings, all these ancestors who held fast. In the residency, we exchanged secret sattvas. And we were to wake up this morning with our secret sattva present at our door. And I got a book on the moon. And just reading it quickly, it says, "The moon is over 4.5 billion years, a 4.5 billion year old companion ancestor." It's nice. I thought, just right for this talk. She's the 36th name in the long list of women ancestors that we chanted this morning. And this is a little bit of the story of her life. She was born in 1223. So Dogen would be 23 years old. He was born in 1200, just to give you a little reference. He was around, okay? And she was the first Japanese woman who received Dharma transmission in the Zen lineage and became an abbot of her own monastery and a Rinzai Zen teacher. And her Dharma name that we are familiar with is Mugai Nyodai. She was discovered by this scholar, Barbara Rausch, who was studying medieval statues. And at that time, when you were the abbot of the temple, they usually did a bronze casting of you. And she found this statue that she thought had very feminine qualities. And so she started to find out, like, who is this casting here, and found out it was Mugai Neodai. Nobody knew. And so she started a institute for studying these different statues and images to see who else might be discovered, and can we find anything else about their life. I wrote to my friend Hobai, as it for a translation of her name, Mugai Neodai, and this is what he wrote. Mu is the character Mu, means without, or there is not, or just no. Gai means outside or external. And Neo means thus, such, or the absolute, or the Tathagata. And Do is great, vast. So he says, this is a tough combination to translate. My best shot would be, the vastness of suchness has no outside. It's quite a heavy duty name. So that's Mugai Neodai. Last Sunday I spoke about Otagaki Rengetsu and how I came to find out about her life through a bowl, a ceramic bowl that she made. She was a potter, poet, nun, and how this broken pot was restored with kintsugi, this gold line, to make something imperfect look more beautiful and increase its beauty from its imperfection. So I seem to be on a roll here with broken vessels, I realized. So anyway, her broken bucket, the broken bowl. But her poem of awakening really struck me. She's just going about her daily life, day and night. Nothing special. And just practicing the Dharma. And who of us has not tried in our daily life and keeps trying so hard to keep the bucket of our life together? Strap it up. Hold it together. Straps of constructs and ideas, perhaps, that we project on ourselves, who we think we need to be, or what needs to be happening, another strap, just to hold the bucket together. This misunderstanding, the nature of things. So, wrapping around our ideas to hold things together. What are we holding together, actually? And what does holding it together mean? What are we holding together, and what does it mean, holding it together? Can we hold it together? Can we really hold it together? And how many of us have been cleaned out by breaking out, breaking up, breaking open, heartbreak? They're not something we plan. It's a movement. It's ruptures that need to take place so something new can be born. It can be a very hard journey to bear, that we all have to bear, that things change, that they're not permanent, that we can't hold on to what we love sometimes. I was with a woman the other day, and she says, I think all of life is just letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. So I think you're right. Allowing space, this infinite capacity of heart and mind. With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together, and then the bottom fell out. What is she inviting us to see? something has to give when we need to shapeshift. Synchronistically, I received another poem about a week ago, and I just thought it fit as well, so I'll read that. It's by someone I don't really know. I looked her up. Her name's Donna Ashworth. She writes a lot of poems about just our daily life. This was called You're Perfect. If you're not broken, bruised, weathered, and worn, where have you been, my friend? If your battered heart does not break every day, then perhaps you are not paying attention. Don't come out of this life preserved and perfect, my friend. You're supposed to crumble and rebuild a million times over until your soul is satisfied. So when we say the names of these lists of ancestors, to think of it that these are people. It's not just we're going through Bibashi Butsu Daisho, Shiki Butsu Daisho. Like, these are us. These are lives that were lived, that went through great suffering, goodness too, mental, physical, physiological, political, upheavals, pandemics, famine, war, death, divorce, inequality, bias. Everyone on that list as a human being went through this, and they raised the Bodhi mind. They had a practice. They were all studying the Buddha way, wandering into wonder deeply, finding the path of Buddha Dharma, which is a path of liberation, to put an end to suffering, a way to live an undivided life, non-dual. As Daido would say, seeing with an unconditioned eye, just sitting, walking, speaking, eating. So they made it through. And I think just to remember that we have a practice. If it's your first day or you've been practicing for years, you have a practice. You have a path. And so she says, Zazen, this old woman. If you want to know your true nature, you need to turn toward the source of your delusive thoughts. This is called Zazen. What the Buddha realized is that the bottom has to fall out. Everything has to go. There wasn't Buddhism when Buddha was Buddha. We made Buddhism. It's gradual, and then it's sudden as we realize things. It's gradually, and then suddenly it comes. Sometimes it's very sudden. Usually it's gradually. And we train and we practice. And then there's this key moment of Buddha's life, of Buddha's liberation, when he saw through the very last trace of ignorance of the mind, of himself, of this, what he said was a mental construct. And in his poem, we hear it of House Builder. Through the round of many births, I roamed without reward, without rest, seeking the House Builder. Painful is birth again and again. You will not build a house again. All your rafters broken, the ridgepole destroyed, gone to the unformed. The mind has come to the end of craving. Sometimes when I'm self-involved, I always say, oh, House Builder, there you go again, putting that bucket together. All your ideas, thoughts, and all that. Oh, House Builder, you're seen. Each week we have a teacher's meeting online. And we were talking this week, and it's like, this one's ill, this one's getting divorced, this one died, we didn't know about it, this one left their job. And Sean was very exasperated, says, does anybody have any good news? And Roshi immediately responded, and he said, yes, we have a path of practice to engage all that arises. We have a way to engage all that arises, to alchemize, to integrate, to understand karma, to understand suffering, the nature of reality. And we have generations of realized ancestors who made it through to bring us the Dharma here and now. And we have our genetic family. You might think, oh no, no wisdom in that line. Well, if you're sitting in this room, something came through. So there is goodness. So sometimes we have to go dig a little deeper because there's a lot of wounding and hurt too in our generations, both in our genetic, in our culture, all along. But there's also goodness. And so they're unemployed right now. And I spoke last week of how the dead are not dead. They need a job. And so we have to employ them with our life too at this time. So to remember, we're not practicing alone. To see ourselves as part of the continuous body of interconnecting, interdepending, interpenetrating members, past, present, future. That's the function of Buddhist training and meditation practice. To remember we have a path to be free from suffering. Remember this over the holiday season as you visit your families. I have a path. I have a path. When something's pressing your button majorly, I have a path. I can be still. I can say, just a minute, and nobody will find you in the bathroom. Just go to the bathroom for a few minutes, settle yourself down, and see if you can give something different. So back to Chione and her noble path. There's actually two versions of her life, the details. So the details of her life we're not really certain about, many of these ancestors. So we know she was born in 1223, died in 1298, and it was generally believed that her father was Adachi Yasumura, a samurai warrior of the mid-Kamakura period. Said that in this story, she was from a, remember how we started, that she couldn't read or write? This says she was from a high-ranking family that lived on a large estate at the edge of Kamakura, and that the Adachi clan was supposedly known to be brutal warriors and discreet negotiators moving in the inner circles of the shogunate. So you remember in Rengetsu's time, that was coming apart. The samurai served the clan lords, raising their children into loyalties. And her father made sure she studied poetry in its precise, ordered form in Chinese and Japanese. She learned to play music, read classics and the scriptures. She learned archery, swordplay, falconry, and could read and speak Chinese. Very different bio. She was raised in a world where there were teachings of Buddhism and Zen, but it had been twisted to fit the violence and power struggles of politics and war. The idea of no self was very corrupted. So they were using this idea of no self to say, I can kill, there's no one to kill, and there's no one to be killed. Nay, nay. Wrong understanding. Not true. It's empty. So there's no one to kill, no thing to kill, no one to do the killing. Mm-mm. How do they say? Danger, Will Robinson. If you remember that. What was that? Lost in Space. What a great title for a show. Or Zazen. You know, when your mudra comes apart, you're there. Lost in Space. There it is, right there. She was married at age 20, and at 45, she began to visit Rinzai monasteries, according to this biography. And she would walk miles to sit Zazen. You hear that, those of you that are in the neighborhood? She would walk miles to sit Zazen and began to wonder what the real truth of Zen would be outside the warrior's hands. Although laywomen were not commonly admitted to monasteries at the time, Dharma custom assured that any woman who sought Buddhist teachings would receive them. At 54, she became widowed, and she already had a daughter who was married, and she was ordained as a nun in her 50s, receiving the name Mugai Neodai. So, of course, in the other one I read, I'm of humble birth. I can't read or write and must work all the time. Didn't sound like that from the other bio. So we know she studied Rinzai Zen with a Japanese teacher, Eni Benin, at Tokufuji Monastery. So Enin was born the same time as Dogen. So they were alive at the exact same time, building their own monasteries. Kind of like to hear like this was happening at the same time. And she found her way to Eni. And then she had a Chinese teacher, which was known in Japanese as Mugaku Sogen. And it said that one day she showed up at the doorstep of Mugaku Sogen's monastery and asked for face-to-face teaching. She's got some chutzpah. Dokusanner. And there was recorded this one encounter. So this was recorded, this one encounter with her teacher. We only have two of her waka poems. That's all that's recorded of her teachings. Two poems, which are kind of enlightenment poems. He asked her, "How can I help you?" So she's having this face-to-face teaching. And he says, "How can I help you?" And he gave her a cup of tea. Don't expect anything here. And she said, "What is Zen?" And supposedly that was the question she asked at every temple she visited. What is Zen? And Mugaku said, took her into his eyes, looked right into her eyes, and he said, "Zen is the heart of the one who asks, not someone else's words." Zen is the heart of the one who asks, not someone else's words. So I think we can all drink that in as a great teaching. And here she composed one of her two recorded waka poems. She said, "My teacher spoke, and I replied. Not understanding, I had surely lost my way. But now I realize myself is moon on water, none other than a floating cloud." So she wrote that, and that's recorded after that encounter. In one version of her life, the Imperial Convent record suggests, threatened with exclusion from training at Tofukuji, because the presence of a woman might distract the monks training there, Mugai Neodai burned her face and only then gained entry. Her self-mutilation was a declaration of her sincerity and lack of interest in using feminine wiles. So this is, again, one of those many double-edged stories, sword stories, speaking of women who harm themselves in order to allow them to practice into a center. The story goes, as a novice nun, the monk in charge was not fond of her. So for work, he gave her this old lacquer bucket with new strips of bamboo and told her to fetch water from the river, which was hours of walk away, guaranteed that she would be away from his presence for much of the day. I remember feeling things like that, being sent off somewhere with the feeling of being out of someone's hair for the day. Do you ever have that experience? But the bucket was rather leaky, and she spent hours trying to add new braces to fix it. It just leaked badly. It said she fetched water, meditated, worked constantly in the temple, and practiced for many years without attaining enlightenment, and became very discouraged with her practice. Yeah, we can feel that way. Some of us go for many years and we start to doubt and wonder, is anything happening? And a teacher often say, just keep going, just keep practicing. And she might have felt like that bucket was a lot like her, leaky, and patiently trying to fix this broken life. And she realized something. And this is where the story picks up in The Hidden Lamp. She meets this kind old woman at the temple and asks her, is there a possibility that I could attain the Buddha way even though I don't seem to have any skills? Remember, the sixth ancestor, Huineng, was an illiterate. It doesn't depend on words and letters or IQ. It's a direct pointing to our human mind and our realization from direct experience. And I remember feeling this way for many years in my training and complaining to my teacher about nothing happening. And I don't know if I'm in the right practice, blah, 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 blah. Maybe I was a rotten fruit, things like that. And sometimes he would agree. It's called building a cage around a cage. I was going in thinking I was going to get something really nice, like, don't worry, keep trying. He's like, yeah, maybe you are a rotten fruit. I was like, oh, no, I'm not, you know. And sometimes I would get encouragement that the Dharma takes time. We're ripening, you know, this path. We're all on the path to Buddhahood, bodhisattvas, just practicing our life, just doing our work, practicing our life, sitting, meditating, just, we don't know, and we keep practicing. We keep learning how to let go and get out of the way of the way. Let go of trying to come to some state, which we don't even know what that is. How many of us sit and feel like we have to fix ourselves, fix something, have it all together? What would that even look like, to have it all together? I don't know. Just hold fast to the desire to awaken and cultivate a heart of compassion. Chinyoni said with happiness, with this practice as my companion, I have only to go about my daily life practicing day and night. Yeah, so part of what we hear a lot is just do what, can you do what you're doing while you're doing it completely? Practice in such a way. That's why we get up and we just walk. We just drink. Because we're always preoccupied and we're not just. We're doing several things at once, and that gap is a place where we begin to suffer because we so want to be unified and undivided. And all it takes is just a notice and a breath to just bring ourselves fully into our embodiment and what we're doing. In Buddha Dharma, delusive thinking can include not realizing what you know and don't know, not asking the right questions, failing to see things as they are, seeing how we cling to rigid stories, assumptions, judgments, preconceptions, and propping up this idea of a I or me. There is one, but one that's settled, known, dependable, thinking we can get what we want to the exclusion of what we don't want. That's deluded thinking. This deluded or ignorant state of mind can lead to a lack of insight because it's one of the three poisons. There's greed, there's anger and hatred and delusion, which are these root hindrances that we find in our practice. And then as the antidote, we're encouraged to cultivate our virtuous qualities. We study this, the paramitas. So we also have these virtuous qualities of generosity, of patience, of joyful effort, of giving, of morality, of meditation and concentration, of wisdom. We're able to see the emptiness of all the five conditions, the wisdom, prajnaparamita, what we chanted in the Heart Sutra, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no color, sound, smell, taste, touch, phenomena. This is possible. It happens in a moment of zazen. There's this gap where you let go of a thought and you come back to your breath, but there's somewhere in there where you touch that emptiness. But then we fill in rather quickly. But that grows more and more where we can rest and we begin to let go into that spaciousness that we are, to see that other aspect of ourself, that vastness. I tried to keep the bucket together. Reminds me of the constant tension and exhaustion, the years of vigilance aimed at protecting an idea of a self, being my own obstacle. To release the grip of that old bucket of ours, what allows us to let the bits and pieces just scatter to the ground? I remember I had some new raku pots that I finished. They were like the best ones I ever made. And I was going to take them to my cabin, which was just around the corner, a few steps through the woods. So I put them in a baggie, a little plastic bag, and I just put one little slip of paper between them because I thought, I'm only gone just around the woods back to my A-frame. And when I picked up the bag, the handle broke, and I heard this click when they hit the ground, that chink you don't want to hear when you have pots. And I went, oh, no, no. And I looked in, and dominoes. Every pot broke, all six of them, all the way up. And I was like, oh, that was like my impatience, you know, because I was like, well, maybe this is too much information, but you know when you have to go to the bathroom and you don't, and you start doing more than you should and you wish? So I had that going on, and so I broke everything. But that began my path of restoration, too, of beautifying those broken pots. But anyway, a little sideway there. What of us does not want to appear competent at all times? Zen practice comes with a willingness to come apart. And sometimes it's appropriate to stop patching things back together. This is why practice is not for the faint of heart. it will require for us to come apart at times. And I was remembering this quote from Pema Chodron, and I found it, and she said, "When you hear some teaching that rings true to you, and you feel some trust in practicing the way, and some trust in it being a worthwhile way to live, then you're in for a lot of inconvenience." I thought that was going to take me somewhere different. I was like, oh, really? Pema heard one of Trungpa's students give a talk, and he began by saying, "If you're interested in these teachings, then you have to accept the fact that you're never going to get it all together." And she was quite relieved, actually. We have this idea of perfection. And I can honestly say, from where I'm sitting, we're never going to get all those loose ends tied up. We're always going to be in a position where we don't know. We're always going to be in a position where something more can happen. Now is uncertain. We don't know. And that's why it's so powerful to be in it. Pema's teacher told her, Trungpa, "There are those inconveniences that actually perk you up, keep you awake, present gaps in your cozy, seamless reality of centralizing into yourself." So, as Dharma students, we live between keeping things from falling apart and letting them fall apart. Knowing how to keep things together is a valuable skill. Gioni tried really hard to strap that bucket up because she cared. She wanted to carry that water. She wanted to hold things together so she could carry the water. And when it fell apart, she made excellent use of that circumstance as well. Our liberation deepens with the refinement of our capacity of flexibility in our discernments to make excellent use of circumstances, since now is always uncertain. In the commentary on this case, Kodo Boyd Sensei reflects, she was the last ancestor we chanted, Kodo Boyd Sensei, Kodo Boyd Daiyosho, which means great teacher. Great teacher. So each Daiyosho means we're saying great teacher, great teacher, great teacher. Sounds like an oven bird, doesn't it? Great teacher, great teacher, great teacher. She says, "Awareness of our essential and undeniable freedom comes with the awareness that we and all things are without self. The one who is liberated must be allowed to disappear like the water and the moon, moving between patched bucket and bottomless bucket. The ability to exercise our freedom to keep things together and to let things come apart, all according to circumstances." After months of wholehearted practice, she went out on a full moon night to draw some water from the well. The bottom of her old bucket, held together by bamboo strips, suddenly gave way. The reflection of the moon vanished with the water. When she saw this, she attained great realization. So no matter how we look at it, when the bottom of the bucket falls away, it will not hold water. Maybe we too can grow to trust the freedom of living where the moon does not dwell. So that's our Dharma Ante, Mugai Neodai. As we now head into these holy days, May you be safe. May you find peace in all your encounters. May the moon disappear from your bucket. And may you join us for New Year's. If you would like to renew your vows, we'll be open, not into New Year's Eve, but before it. We'll have silent sitting, and you can make vows. We'll all have a vow ceremony together. And then you can go off to Times Square, or whatever you like to do. But I just want to thank you all as a Sangha for your support and for your practice. And as Chioni says, hold fast to the desire to awaken and cultivate a heart of compassion. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.